You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you're interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. This movie review also comes for subscribers at Time Lord level or above, an uncut, unedited, longer video version of the review. Become a subscriber and check it out. When Chris asked us, "Hey guys, who wants to review this movie, Devil All the Time?" I thought, well, why not? What's the worst that could happen? It's on Netflix and it's got a bunch of superheroes in it. Well, as it turned out, that September was the worst month of my life. Thanks, Netflix. Thanks, Devil All the Time. No, not really. This is my story.
But it wasn't just his story. It was all our story.
Bradley's been stuck in this narration voice mode for like 24 hours now since seeing this thing.
Well, the narration was actually my favorite part, ironically enough, I suppose.
Apparently, that's the author of the book.
Oh, well, that explains it. He knew how to read it, so it worked.
I'll say this. Anything that starts off right off the bat with narration that continues, I'm immediately going to be mildly suspect of.
Yeah.
It has certainly worked in some things. I'm looking at you, Shawshank Redemption. But more often than not, it's kind of a cheap device to help you do an easier path to making a film. In fact, I'll even go so far as to say in here, this kind of reminded me of Blade Runner's narration, where a lot of time I'm like, we kind of got everything we needed to get from what you were showing us. And maybe test audiences are like, I'm confused, but I don't know. We are watching and talking about, we just watched and talked about The Devil All the Time, which premiered on Netflix. It's one of the biggest stellar casts of the year of anything that's come out. But I think it met our crowd of critics here with mixed results, or maybe not mixed at all. Maybe just bad. I don't know. I'm Chris. That's Bradley.
Hey.
Then Adrian.
Yeah, Lou.
And Lawayne.
Hey, how's it going?
These guys have been cracking me up in the chat about this thing. We have an internal chat. Lawayne writes, Chris Evans was originally cast as Sheriff Lee Bodecker, but had to drop out of the film due to scheduling conflicts. His Marvel co-star Sebastian Stan took over the role. Bucky just keeps chasing Cap.
Yeah, I saw that. That's literally, I'm like, oh, of course. And then we got Spider-Man, and we've got one of the Batman, and...
Two Spider-Men. Eh?
There are two?
Because of the preacher and his method of saving
with spiders.
Literal Spider-Man.
I see what you're getting at there.
Wah, wah. Okay. Question Bird.
And Mysterio, if you count the producers. Jake Gyllenhaal is one of them.
Oh really?
Does that even count? Who cares? Jake Gyllenhaal produces a lot of shit. He's like, I'm tired of acting. Y'all never give me awards. I'm going to just produce shit now. Yeah, I mean, it's Netflix. You kind of like, you make your money either way, I guess. I don't know. This is a film that does definitely feel like the intent was originally to put into theaters. And it got a very limited release on the 11th, but then, you know, every theatrical release is limited right now. But it came on Netflix. Story here, 1945, starts off with Bill Skarsgård, if you don't know, as Pennywise from It.
Another franchise actor.
Not playing a super creepy serial killer here, but still, there's something about Skarsgård that's just creepy when you look at him right away. He's come back from the Second World War. One of the first things we see is him coming across the still-breathing body of another fellow military man who's been crucified and scalped by the Japanese and is just covered with flies, and they have to like kill him to put him out of his misery. That's not going to give you nightmares or affect every second of the rest of your waking and sleeping life. Poor bastard has to go to Coal Creek, Ohio. After that, on the way, falls in love with a waitress in a cafe. You know, I mean, as one does. I certainly did when I was 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, a few times. Like, there's some stuff with his family, but basically he ends up getting married with her and they move to a town that the real name of it, and this is where the author is from here, Knock'em Stiff, Ohio. That's the actual name for the author Donald Ray Pollock, who this novel that this is based on is from, which, by the way, won all kinds of awards. It was met with universal critical acclaim. Ahem. He had a kid. The kid's getting older. It's also following stories of some other people. It's not long before kid, for reasons I don't want to go into here in case you want to watch the movie, he no longer is with his parents and has to go live with his grandmother. And there he's got a stepsister that he really cares for quite a bit, but is kind of suffering from religious fanaticism and naivety, which really bugs him because his dad had real problems with religion. In fact, this author, I suspect, has real problems with religion.
It would seem like it.
There's a new preacher in this town who right off the bat, he's like, I don't like him. Played by Robert Pattinson, who, you know, whose performance just screams, this guy, if this was a Stephen King novel, which it kind of at points feels like it is going to turn into one, he would decidedly be the villain or whoever was channeling the evil spirit or what have you. There's a lot of other side characters as well here. You have, we said Sebastian Stan, he's a local sheriff in this one town, and his sister, played by Riley Keough, is married to Jason Clark, and he's a serial killer, making her go with him to basically give rides to hit young hitchhiking men, ask them to have sex with his wife so he can take pictures, and then murdering them. He's a great guy, as you might expect. But this film also has, like, Mia Wasikowska in a role, Haley Bennett, Eliza Scanlon. It's a really big cast, and it's a really long movie. It's over 2 hours long of people talking all like this. This in a draw, and everyone is bad, and religion is always bad. And I tell you, I got tired pretty quick.
It's all having to do with how these certain characters feel God is, I guess, communicating with them, or what they feel their faith allows them to do or calls upon them to do. And of course, it's all just horrendous shit, especially with Jason Clark being a serial killer. It's always some kind of violent act. I feel like for a lot of people, this is going to be a shocking kind of downer of a movie. If you've seen other dark films, this one's going to be a little run-of-the-mill. Like, I'm not a fan of religion. I'm not going to tell anyone else not to believe in a certain thing. But the whole thing about religious fanatics and the Westboro Baptist Church and such, I've seen better movies attack that. Just stick to being a Southern Gothic, which is clearly yes. What it wants to be.
Hillbilly Gothic.
This feels like a Joe Lansdale book, but without everything that makes Joe Lansdale really fun. Happen Leonard, yep. Cold of July. All I know is that I like some of the accents.
Yeah, some of them seemed authentic, even.
I thought others, it was kind of interesting for a while, but oh man, it also fucking put me through that existential dread of like, oh, so we're just never going to escape Disney, like no matter what you do. No matter if you make an indie film with an actor that you've never heard of, it's going to turn out, oh wait, he was actually Tom Holland the whole time, yeah, under a different name.
There's just no light in this film at all. There's no laughter. There's no light of any kind. There's no break. And I wouldn't mind that if it had something newish to offer, that, and it wasn't so ridiculously heavy-handed and overt about its mission aim. I mean, like I said, somebody, either the writer or the director or both, really doesn't like Christianity. And hey, man, I feel you, but come on. This is Jim Thompson by someone who doesn't understand Jim Thompson. It's just like, all people are bad. You're like, okay, but you need to make them interesting.
They're the devil all the time.
All the time.
Oh my God. And it was then that Chris knew Bradley had a handle on this movie.
It's so relentlessly bleak for so much of it, and everyone is so ugly and mean and terrible. Anybody who isn't those things is abused by those people, and everything is interconnected in a way that feels, if it weren't like the early 20th century in hillbilly land, it would feel almost too coincidental. But when it takes you like 10 hours to get 50 miles up the road, sure, everything happens in this sort of area, but it was so awful. I don't mean like technically bad. I just, there's so many awful people and so many awful things in it that we even get to the final scene of the movie. And I was waiting for the dude in the bug van to like be not literally Charlie Manson, but somebody like that.
Yeah.
Like another. This character is not going to escape either.
There were several times I was like, wait, is that supposed to be a real person? Or is this a callback? Is this an Easter egg to, I don't know, horrible people fans who are out there, I'm sure. It's just so glossy. And I never got the feeling that I was really in the time period that it was represented as being in. Maybe because everyone's so damn pretty, except for Jason Clarke. I've never seen the appeal of that guy, but
that's one of the things about doing period pieces, but particularly like this. They try to sort of ugly up Sebastian Stan a little bit. He looks a little doughy and sweaty.
He put on some weight, yeah.
Right, but you still have Tom Holland as effectively your lead, and he's Tom Holland. It's Spider-Man. He feels out of place just by existing there. And he's also the luckiest shot in the world.
And that's when I knew I would take a paycheck from Netflix.
Well, it means dude. Those were the words his daddy told him. And I'm thinking, watching, and those were some horrible words, terrible advice. And the film's like, well, I'm not interested in exploring that. We're moving on.
Yeah.
Don't bring it up again, you know.
Because the film has so many kind of branching storylines, what's going to eventually happen is that there's going to be some that you're way more interested in than others. And unfortunately, the most interesting storyline was the one with Tom Holland, because I'm into something that's like cathartically violent.
Sure.
There's a scene of violence in this movie that I thought was well deserved. And you think it's going to keep going that kind of like, okay, well, his storyline is almost like a Western type storyline. You think it's going to go really focus on that, and does a little bit, but it ends up feeling a little disappointing. It spends more time on all the other shit that I do not care so much about, like the serial killer aspect of it. Because of that, I thought this was kind of boring, but I also don't think it's straight up a bad movie. I don't know. I've been hearing a lot of people like really hating this and calling it a bad film. But I don't think anything of it is really badly put together. I just think it's just not going to be for some people.
It's a Elseworlds Spider-Man 1945. Yeah. What if Peter Parker had been born in the Deep South and decided to fight crime? Well, it would have been horrible.
You know, we talked about the length of the movie, and at least part of it has to be the pace at which people speak. Draws that movie out. It's like 3/4 speed. So, you know, if everybody just kind of bumped up to like regular speed or a little more, maybe it'd be under 2 hours. But there's a whole lot of drawling in this movie, and it's
the... Well, that's what Netflix added the 1.5 time speed for, specifically because they knew this movie was coming out.
One of the things I did find sort of interesting about this, because it would normally be another of the tropes in this, normally there's invariably a character, if not the protagonist, then somebody associated with the protagonist, that is part of the cycle of violence that travels between generations, right? And that's in here, but it's different than it usually is, because Spider-Man's dad is not abusive. He's violent and dangerous, but in the defense of his family, or at least what he perceives to be the defense of his family.
He's insane.
Right.
But he loves his family.
But he's super, he loves his family. And so that's this sort of weird role model that Tom Holland, I keep wanting to call him Spider-Man, that Tom Holland has to, this is how you protect your family, right? So it follows that same sort of cycle of violence pattern, but instead he directs it outward instead of against people within his family. He takes the I'm going to exact vengeance lesson, and I'm glad he doesn't take the other lessons dad had, but it felt weird that that was the case. Like, he looked like, oh, well, that's a little too far. Like, the ultimate thing that his father does, that's a little too much. I don't know. It just feels like there's a lot here, but not at the same time. Like Adrian was talking about, there's a lot of things, but they're not necessarily all stuff you want to follow. There's this little weird plot line involving Sebastian Stan and like the local mob boss. I'm like, I don't need any of this.
No.
Which the movie also decided, we don't need any of this anymore either.
The election, you guys. The election.
There's a lot that could easily have been cut out. And I get that maybe this was more meant more in the book, had more of a profound impact.
Sure.
But this is often the problem with book-to-movie translations like that, especially when it's a really good book. People get a little, you know, queeny about not wanting to leave anything out, yeah, even if it just doesn't translate into this different form of storytelling. And a lot of that just didn't translate. I kind of wish that they had found a way to get rid of the whole serial killer thing and the cop altogether. Through most of the movie, you're like, why is this even happening? Well, you know, it's like, oh, because it becomes a convenient device towards the end of the film to wrap things up. Let's go to final thoughts, though. Bradley, why don't you lead us off with your, well, as Chris asked me to do final thoughts, I said, yeah, God yeah, damn it, Cox, I saw this coming.
I wish I sounded more like Sam Elliott. Well, this here movie... I could probably do Pattinson's voice. What was he doing? Delusions. Sins of this film. But I actually enjoyed his performance. It was so wacky.
Yeah, me too.
I don't think I was supposed to laugh a lot in what I was seeing, but since the opening marquee was delayed, me and my spouse chuckled at that because it was like, boom, double all the time. And we went, and we're like, oh, goodness. And we kept laughing at a lot of inappropriate things throughout. Like, you know, I've heard about making a crucifix out of bark, but that was ridiculous. God. I did enjoy some of the performances.
Sorry.
I did enjoy how sometimes even the actors were like, is this real? There's a scene where someone describes the evil they're about to do, but how maybe that's the hand of God. And the actress listening has this face like, am I really in this movie right now? And it's a problem for immersion, for sure. That probably wasn't her intent. Everyone's really pushing the drawl really thick, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I like sprawling Southern epics. I've read a lot of the Bible and know a lot about faith. I'm not really sure what this was trying to say. Yes, I agree 100%. Fanatics are horrifying. Stay away from fanatics. Did we know that before we saw the movie? I guess whoever wrote this thinks maybe people don't know that. Maybe they don't. Gross. Hilarious. Shouldn't have been. I felt bad after watching it. I didn't hate the time I was watching it. I'm going to give this 6 really good places to pray. Out of 10 murder sites.
Adrian?
Well, like my mama always said, this film has a case of the shooters. And what I mean is, this should have been a series. This had all the trappings of something that I should probably like. And I definitely don't dislike. I just was a little bored. I forgot what headline I saw dared to call this a psychological thriller, which it's not. Everything is so very obvious that you're not going to do any kind of mental gymnastics trying to figure out what's going on. But if you've never seen a movie like this, if you've never seen a movie other than the Marvel films that the cast are from, this may freak you out. This may make you go, this is fucked up and it ruined my day. I like dark movies, and this one was just kind of okay. Good cast, pretty good performances all throughout, and a few good scenes of cathartic violence. But aside from that, every now and then, James Franco decides he wants to make a Walt Whitman movie just out of nowhere. This feels like they just made this movie so that he wouldn't get to make the and so that he wouldn't get the rights to this film, and so we could get a better cast. But either way, I don't know.
It was a public service keeping James Franco from making this film.
Check it out or don't. I don't care. I'm going to give this 2.5 Disney actors that you will never escape out of 5.
Luane.
I spent a lot of time being reminded of all of the other things that this reminded me of, and all of the other movies and all the other books. And a lot of those are things I like, and there are pieces of this I like. I like the performances. There's a lot of people playing against type. There are awful people, and sometimes it's okay because you know that at least in this universe, they're going to get what's coming to them. It's fine. For me, it's kind of middle of the road. Like Adrian said, watch it or don't. Your only investment really is your time. Because, I mean, it's a Netflix movie. You don't have to go to the theater to see it. It's 3 out of 5 Pepsi caps.
Man, this is the Sin City of Hillbilly Noir. I'm just saying. It's hyper-stylized and exaggerated to the point where it's just kind of absurd. Like, I was with Bradley. At points, I'm just laughing at it. Like, especially Pattinson, who gives a fun performance, but you're like, do you know what movie you're in? I don't think you know what movie you're in. I mean, I kept expecting the lady from the supermarket in the mist to show up and start screaming. Oh. it's really over the top. And that sounds like I'm giving it a recommendation. I'm not really. There's points that it's enjoyable. But if this had been an hour and a half, I probably would have been like, sure. It's not a good movie, but it's kind of entertaining. But at over 2 hours, damn, man, it really turns into a long, grueling experience, especially when you're like, so that was it? That was why we had to spend like an hour of this movie with those characters, was just so they could come in and interact with the main character towards the very end for a second? I didn't really care for this. I'm going to give this 3.5 out of 10 casting directors who really had a thing for redheads. Did you notice? Because I did. These characters were not related or anything, but damn, they were everywhere.
Well, it's the South. They could have been kind of related. You never know.
Well, that there is that. Yeah, I see what you're doing. My apologies to anyone from the South who is not into incest. We're terrible. I'm sorry. We know the whole South is
Wait,
not like
aren't
that.
Aren't you from, like, the South-ish, Chris?
Well, yeah, I'm in Virginia. I mean, it's like literally you could drive in a half an hour to the North.